Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, happy Monday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Glad to have you part of the broadcast. I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith. And our goal on a daily basis is to try and find ways that we can connect faith to life every day, apply biblical principles to life situations. And our situation today is dire for many, in fact, for millions. And we're going to get an important update on that. I do want to just mention, though, before we jump into today's conversation, that Faith Radio is in the middle of a partnership opportunity with FEBC. That's the Global Missionary Radio Outreach that broadcasts in 100-plus languages around the globe, 102 languages. They're in 46 countries, reaching millions every day, primarily in Asia and the Pacific Rim there. They are looking to provide solar-powered radios to remote areas where the gospel is not always heard, but the radio is something that's relied on, and so FEBC staff actually hand-deliver these radios. We're helping to provide some funding for that. $30 provides one radio. Every radio you give has the power to reach at least 25 people with the gospel. And FEBC receives calls and letters from listeners daily asking to hear more about the gospel. So it's just a way for us to partner with them. The goal during this month of June is 400 radios, and don't have an update, recent update, but I know we're well over 100 coming in so far. So thank you for your willingness to partner with us and to give toward that cause. And you can go to myfaithradio.com to make your gift on the link right there, myfaithradio.com. And thank you for doing that. We're going to talk about another great need, and there's a need for the gospel, but there's a desperate need for the basics of life as we talk about those that are displaced in the globe today. And it's almost beyond imagination, but a recent UN report indicated the number of refugees worldwide would equal the population of one of the top 25 largest countries, just under 60 million. That's up significantly from last year and up almost double from 10 years ago. We're going to get an update on what's happening in the world of refugees and displaced people and get into immigration discussion as well with Jenny Yang. Jenny is the Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Program at World Relief. And she's been our guest in the past. We're happy to have her back. Previously to working at World Relief, she worked at a large political fundraising firm in Maryland. And she has researched refugee and asylum laws in Madrid through the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, co-authored a wonderful book called Welcoming the Stranger, Justice, Compassion, and Truth in the Immigration Debate. And we've got a couple of copies of that book to give away. So as we have a conversation today, I think you'll be challenged and interested in hearing more. You can give us a call and sign up for the drawing for the books. We'll do that at the end of the show, as we do each time we have resources available. That's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Jenny Yang, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Great. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Well, let's talk about a world that, I have to say it's completely foreign to me to be a refugee in a camp someplace, but it 60 million, almost 60 million worldwide. It's just almost hard to imagine, up from 51 million just a year ago. And, maybe just before we jump into kind of what it's like, let's talk about the whys. Why is this number so dramatic?
Sure. Well, what's really striking about the number that you mentioned, almost 60 million, is that is the highest number of displaced persons ever recorded in the history of the United Nations, which is really startling. And actually what they have been saying is that this has become the worst migration crisis since World War II. And now we know what happened during World War II, and literally entire nations were consumed. But what you see recently is that there's a high concentration of migrants today. They're being forcibly displaced because of conflict and persecution, really in certain areas of the world. They're mostly in Syria, for example. We've had about 4 million refugees just fleeing from Syria itself as refugees. But within Syria, even a greater number of people who haven't actually fled to another country but are internally displaced. We see the conflict in Iraq with the expansion of the Islamic State taking over large swaths of Iraqi territory that have led to a lot of people leaving Iraq as well. That's on top of the refugees that actually fled during the Iraq War years ago as well. But because of this new expansion of ISIS, there's been greater numbers fleeing from Iraq as well. The two other areas that we're seeing large numbers of displaced persons is in Ukraine because of the incursion of Russian forces in that area, but also in Central Africa. We at World Relief are serving many people in South Sudan right now, and they are the newest country in the world, and yet because of conflict between several parties there and because of ongoing ethnic tensions, we've seen a large number of displaced persons in South Sudan. And what's really actually interesting about South Sudan is that they have a predominantly largely Christian population. They actually became independent from Sudan, which is predominantly Muslim. And so George W. Bush is really involved in the creation of that country. And so it's really heartbreaking to see the turmoil that they've encountered over the past several months.
Jenny, you've been neck deep in this for years and passionate about helping the refugee. And I think Saturday was World Refugee Day or Global Refugee Day, right? So this
that's right. Every June 20th, every year, is called World Refugee Day, where the international community learns about refugees, lifts up their voices, shares their stories, and really highlights some of the ongoing crises around the world. That's right.
Give us a sense. Can you maybe just provide a picture of what life would be like day to day for these displaced families? I mean, maybe, you know, things like where do they go? How do they know where to go? How big? What are these camps like? Give us a sense of that.
Sure. So I can share a story of how I visited a refugee camp in Amman, Jordan, actually in January. So just about 4 or 5 months ago. And I went on a trip with a delegation. And what's interesting about Jordan is that about 15 to 20% of their population is made up of refugees right now. So they're hosting an incredible number of refugees within their country. And that's as if the entire population of Canada were to empty into the United States within a span of about 4 or 5 years, is exactly what Jordan is going through. And in fact, in Lebanon, it's even higher. A quarter of their population is made up of Syrian refugees. And so the overwhelming humanitarian need that is being placed on host countries like Lebanon and Jordan is really overwhelming. And so when I went to Jordan, many of the refugees that are fleeing from Syria are actually not actually in refugee camps, but are living in cities. And so, for example, I met with a group of about 4 Syrian women, and one of the women, her name was Hijib, and she was telling me that she was a lawyer, actually. And her husband was a teacher, and they were raising their children in a small town in southern Syria. And the rebel forces actually came through, and she was forced to flee. And literally she took two bags of her belongings, knew that she had to go south to Jordan, and basically fled across the border into Jordan, where she actually is living in a community of other refugees that actually fled at the same time. And she would tell me that every day she would wake up in Jordan and start crying because she didn't know whether or not her other family was safe because she had to flee that day. Literally, her children have been having a really tough time in schools, and basically she's lost her entire livelihood. Her husband and her are very well-educated Syrian, middle to upper-class Syrians, and yet they've lost everything and are really now living in a community where they're depending on either the international community or doing other work in the marketplace to actually provide for their families. And so a lot of refugees, when you have about 85% of the refugees in Jordan, for example, not living in a camp, they often do that because in the camps it's a really tough situation. The refugee camp Zaatari in Jordan is pretty much at capacity at about 84,000. And it's in the middle of a desert. You're confined to a very, very small tent. You get rationed food pretty much for your daily subsistence. You cannot work. And so the dignity of work that refugees really long for is oftentimes only available outside of the camps. And so many of these families are just really just struggling to survive. And many of them were just not knowing when they could actually go back. I think there was a hope that they could go back to Syria 2 or 3 years after the conflict, but it's almost in its fifth year now. And so many of the refugees are even just losing hope of ever being able to see their homelands again.
You know, if they're living in the cities, I assume that they're taking up or they're flooding maybe the housing issues, right? Or they're crammed in with other people, right? I assume that that's just one of the many sort of ramifications, right? Of you know, an increase of population of 15 to 20%.
Yeah, and that's why I think that countries like Jordan or Lebanon are doing an incredible job of actually the government of Jordan was providing free healthcare and free healthcare and education to the refugees, and so many of them were accessing the hospitals, the public hospitals, and the children even now are able to go to school, but it's been an overwhelming burden. And in fact, Jordan recently, actually when I was there in January, has closed its borders because they feel like unless it's a really urgent humanitarian case that they really just cannot accept any more refugees at this point. And so what you're seeing right now in Syria is that a lot of the people who are fleeing are stuck at the border, or they're only allowing vulnerable women and children to cross. And so there's a lot of concerns, I think, that Jordan and other places have had regarding just the sheer number. And again, I think it highlights that refugee responses are often humanitarian responses. And I think the international community, and especially churches, can play a role in welcoming them. And that's something maybe I can talk about as well, is just what churches I've seen are doing in Jordan to help these refugees. But again, I think there is an overwhelming need to respond. And unless there's a political solution, oftentimes these refugees face really, really dire circumstances.
We'll continue with Jenny Yang and talk about the church response and the humanitarian needs and maybe some policy questions as well. You know, if things don't change, what does that mean? And how we can pray. World Relief has a wonderful little download on their website where you can pray for the church and for refugees and for immigrants and for freedom and for immigration reform, and pray for World Relief and the great work they're doing. Jenny Yang is the Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Program at World Relief. She is co-author of the book Welcoming the Stranger. We got some copies of that to give away. If you'd like to be informed on this important discussion, you can call in and sign up for a copy of that book. We'll give that away here at the end of the show. It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH, or maybe your story is one of resettlement or displacement. Love to hear from you today as well. 877-93-FAITH. More in a moment. Past the hour, talking to Jenny Yang today from World Relief. She is the Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Program at World Relief. They have been doing great work for years, and Jenny has been leading this charge in some great ways. Happy to have her back with us here in Connecting Faith. She's co-authored the book called Welcoming the Stranger, It's Justice, Compassion, and Truth in the Immigration Debate, that came out from University Press a couple years ago. We got some copies that we'll give away. You're welcome to join us in the conversation or sign up for a copy of the book at 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient, you want to drop us a note, a question, or a comment, or you can just sign up online as well. It's myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. So, Jenny, we're talking a little bit about, you know, the maybe responses. There's a place for the church and ministries like World Relief to have a key part in that. And I'll maybe have you talk a little bit about that, but maybe just say a word about, does each country's government, are they sort of, providing the direction of this, or is the UN coming in? I mean, how do the UN and maybe NGOs kind of work together to provide the health care and the education and housing and work and food and all those things?
Sure. So in a lot of cases, what happens is it's the responsibility of the host government in order to manage and provide assistance to the refugees. And so you're seeing that in places like Jordan and Lebanon, in places like Kenya, for example, that have either refugee camps or know that there's refugees living in outside the camps in urban communities that in which they can sometimes access health care and school and just basic needs as well. But the United Nations really plays a critical role in helping to coordinate a lot of that assistance or providing it directly when the government cannot do that. So, for example, in a place like Jordan, the government will provide some land and perhaps some infrastructure to set up a camp, but then the United Nations will actually have staff in the camp coordinating assistance and providing shelter for a lot of the refugees that are there. And then in the camps, you actually also have some NGOs that have been working in those camps along with the UN to provide maybe some schooling within the camps or even some health care and things like that. So it is the primary responsibility of host governments to provide some basic even documentation and even registering the refugees. But a lot of times what you'll see in huge humanitarian crises is that the UN has a really important role to play in coordinating a lot of the assistance. And then NGOs like World Relief can partner with them and others to provide some of the basic needs that a lot of refugees have.
What happens if people are turned away? If the borders are closed, or I mean, we heard just not too long ago about some refugees on ships kind of floating through Southeast Asia trying to find a place that would take them. I mean, what typically happens when they can't get in?
I think that's a huge challenge that we're facing right now. The population you're referring to is the Rohingya, which is an ethnic minority from Burma that really are not recognized in Burma right now and start fleeing because they're being pursued and evicted and really cannot live a great life in Burma. And so a lot of times what happens is you'll see refugees taking really perilous routes in boats, for example, trying to cross into Europe. You'll see refugees leaving Southeast Asia and going to places like Australia and even other places as well, other countries in Africa, for example, that are a little bit more safer than where they're fleeing from. So sometimes refugees are able to reach land, and once they reach land, they can either register with the United Nations and go to a refugee camp that's been set up, or register with the UN and just live in a community with other refugees that perhaps may be there as well. But when you are trying to migrate to a place like Europe or Australia or maybe even the United States where there's stricter policies against asylum and refugees, then it becomes a huge challenge. And that's something that the EU is even debating right now is how do we prevent migrants from even taking the journey across the sea to come here when a lot of them will either get rejected and have to go back to where they came from or go to another location where they probably may not be as safe. And so that's something that's being debated right now is how do you perhaps even open more safe migratory routes so that they can actually reach safety versus having to deal with influxes of people who are just arriving by boat.
Let's take a call from Mike. He's listening in St. Paul and has a question about kind of what organizations are sponsoring. And Mike, you're on with Jenny Yang. Go ahead.
Hi, great job, you guys. I'd like to say what agencies like Lutheran Services, Catholic Charities are involved with bringing children that are orphaned over to different countries. Like, for instance, in America, we sponsored two children that were Vietnamese, but they were stuck in Malaysia, and we sponsored them as a family. And here they're like my brother and sister. Even today, they're contributing to society and everything. Some of these children, they never ever be able to go back to these countries. What do we do as citizens of America, of the world,
Good question. Are there if they're sponsoring agencies, does that mean that migrants can find a home?
Sure, that's a great question, Mike. And I actually just want to commend you for being willing to even host some of these refugees. The refugee resettlement process is a very long and arduous process. In fact, the U.S. only brings in about 70,000 refugees per year. And so just because a church, for example, or individual sponsors a refugee overseas does not mean that that person is going to be processed more quickly, because there's a lot of paperwork that goes into processing cases, and each refugee has to go through very stringent security interviews, which oftentimes takes a lot of time. Each refugee has to be interviewed face-to-face with a Homeland Security officer from the U.S., and so scheduling that, getting that done, getting all the biometrics through security, that just takes a very long period of time. And so at World Relief, we're actually one of 9 agencies in the U.S. that resettle refugees. In almost every major city in the U.S., you can probably find one of those 9 that has an office, and we actually do have an office in St. Paul, Minnesota, where we're always looking for volunteers and churches to partner with us in sponsoring these refugees. But for the 70,000 that are resettled, it's great to have churches and individuals that can help them, because many of them have gone through really horrific experiences and really oftentimes only experience freedom and safety once they're here. And many of them are Christian, but many of them are also not as well. So especially for churches, I think there is a certain desire for them to also share the gospel with newly arriving refugees as well. So we also think it's a great missional opportunity when we encounter refugees and hear some of their stories.
Clearly, 70,000 is just a drop in the bucket, right? If there are nearly 60 million, displaced globally.
Yeah, we resettle less than half of 1% of the world's refugees. So we resettle the largest number of 70,000, but in terms of population and per capita, Germany and Australia, Canada, they actually resettle more than the United States per capita. So I do think that the U.S. has a very strong tradition, but I do think that we can probably resettle larger numbers, especially because I know a lot of churches and individuals are willing to work with them. And just as a case in point, in the 70s and 80s, the U.S. resettled over 100,000 refugees, 120,000 refugees consistently in the 90s. And then in the 70s, we received over 200,000 refugees, mostly from Vietnam, through the resettlement program. And so a lot of times, even when you talk to a lot of Vietnamese, many of them have some kind of refugee experience when you talk with them. And so there is a lot more, I believe, the United States can do and should do, especially in regards to just the ongoing displacement we're seeing.
We'll come back, talk a little bit more about, maybe some changes in policy that could take place, and then maybe just need to redefine. What are we talking about, refugee? What does that really mean? And the issues of safety, and again, some practical ways that we can be the hands and feet of Jesus through great ministries like World Relief. Jenny Wong is the Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Program. Jenny Yang, you should say. And she is our guest today. She's also written the book called Welcoming the Stranger. And we'll take your calls in just a moment at 877-933-2484. It's 32 past the hour. Talking today with Jenny Yang, Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Program at World Relief. World Relief is a wonderful organization from the National Association of Evangelicals, a humanitarian organization that's been the front lines for many years, providing real help and meeting physical and spiritual needs for many around the globe. And we're talking about a true crisis of which we're in the midst of. This Saturday, Global or World Refugee Day, just acknowledging the reality that there are just under 60 million refugees. That's up from 51 million just a year ago and up from 37 million a decade ago. You can just imagine if we added 60 million people to our nation just because of their displacement. So what do we do in terms of resettlement? And there is a sense of, it seems like there should be a sense of urgency about this, Jenny, because so many are are really in difficult situations, and maybe we just need to go back and redefine what do we actually mean by a refugee, because there are several different. There's migrants, immigrants. What is the definition of a refugee?
Sure. So refugees are – so an immigrant can be qualified as someone who basically leaves their home country and comes to another country like the United States. So that's a very broad category of immigrants. Now, what's in the category of immigrants, there's very specific subsets of basically what motivates that person to come here. So if someone is fleeing for economic reasons or pursuing a job or is married to someone here, then they won't be considered a refugee. A refugee is basically someone who, because of a well-founded fear of persecution, because of five reasons, whether it's their race, their religion, their nationality, their membership in a particular social group, or political opinion, it's on those basis that they're persecuted as to why they're fleeing to another country is what qualifies as a refugee. So you have to meet that definition in order for you to even be considered a refugee by the United States. And so when we talk about the 60 million that are displaced just generally, a lot of that is because of conflict and persecution, and they would meet this refugee definition. And so as we were talking about before, the U.S. resettles about 70,000 of those refugees, but there's other people who don't come through the resettlement program and arrive at our shores or by plane and are seeking asylum through that way as well. So you do have to meet that very strict definition in order to be a refugee.
It does seem that, you know, from what we understand in maybe places like Syria and Iraq, that perhaps Christians from, you know, ages past, right, some of the earliest foundations of the church, that the Christians are maybe targeted or, maybe that as well. I think you mentioned sort of South of Sudan as well, right, that it seems like someone who is a follower of Christ may be especially vulnerable.
That's completely right. Actually, when I was in Jordan, I didn't just meet with Syrian refugees, but also with a small subset of Christian refugees that were living in Iraq at that time. And many of them are being marked as Christians by what we're seeing as the Nazarene symbol on their homes. And because of the onslaught of ISIS in Syria and Iraq, many of the Christians are specifically being targeted for extinction, really, in those areas. And so there's a real fear that the cradle place of Christianity, which really was birthed in that area, is going to be completely extinct. And so you have communities, Christian communities, that are older than Christians in the United States that have lived out their faith, that have passed their faith along for generations in a really difficult environment because they're a minority in that area. They're not the majority. And so to be able to pass their faith down for generations, to have sacred churches in those areas that have been worshiping God and Jesus Christ and having that tradition, is those places are being targeted. And so a lot of the refugees that especially were fleeing in September of last year, of 2014, were actually significantly more Christian than before. And so one of the things that we've been advocating for at World Relief is the passage of legislation that would actually help religious minorities in the Middle East to be able to find safety in other places. Representative Juan Vargas from California, he actually introduced a bill, H.R. 1568. It's called the Protecting Religious Minorities Persecuted by ISIS Act. Again, it's H.R. 1568, and we've been promoting that and really hoping that members of Congress can get on board, because if this legislation passes, it would actually create a special category for religious minorities, especially for Christians, to be able to gain access and safety through the resettlement program.
Is there we maybe talked about this in the past too, but does our State Department, for example, have sort of a sense of urgency about the religious persecution side, or do they look more at sort of political or maybe economic hardships?
Sure. I think the State Department is really looking at the broader picture of what's happening in the Middle East right now. And, you know, some of the concerns around resettling Christians specifically is, well, if other people know that the U.S. is only taking Christians, then they're going to start targeting them even more, and it's going to provide even more of a precarious situation for them, is one of the things that I've heard. And so I think the State Department is in a tough position because there are not just vulnerable Christians, but there's also a lot of others who are, you know, even Sunni, for example, that are being targeted because they're not extreme enough, for example. And so they're trying to figure out, okay, in these places of refuge, who really are the most vulnerable? And a lot of times Christians are, but there's other cases where if you're Muslim and you're Syrian and you lost your husband in the war, you're taking care of two kids, and you're being targeted and your kids can't go to school and you can't find safety in Jordan, for example. So that's an example of a vulnerable case as well. So they have a tough job in trying to figure out, okay, whom do we resettle and can we really resettle the most vulnerable?
Talk about maybe ways that we can partner with the work that you're doing in terms of advocating for policy reform or change or just support, or what kinds of things are maybe most valuable for, you know, people listening today to say, you know, I want to be a part of making a change here.
Sure. Well, I would offer maybe three quick suggestions. The first is if you look at World Relief's main website, worldrelief.org, we do have the main text as a World Refugee Day celebration, where you can download a prayer card. And, you know, Scripture does encourage us that we are to pray for our brothers and sisters. And in 1 Corinthians 13, it says we're supposed to suffer with them. And so I would really encourage people to just continue to pray for people in the church, especially in the Middle East that are suffering, or in places like South Sudan that are seeing a lot of struggle as well. Secondly, I would encourage folks to really see whether or not there is a local resettlement agency. World Relief has 27 offices in the U.S., but there's a lot of cities where we're not. And so if your church or you are interested in hosting a refugee, I would encourage you to seek out a local resettlement agency. Look on World Relief's website. There's other agencies as well. And lastly, I would say just to engage in advocacy. Many of us vote or contact our members of Congress regarding a host of issues, and I would really encourage folks to make refugees one of the issues that you care about and ask your member of Congress to support. World Refugee Day was just this past Saturday, so it's a great opportunity this week to reach out to your member of Congress. World Relief, if you go to our website, worldrelief.org/advocate, there are specific actions you can take where you can actually support legislation that can actually protect more refugees as well. So those are the three main things I would ask listeners to do.
We've obviously seen a changing maybe face of our nation in terms of the race demographics. You know, by what, the 2023, the same number of foreign-born in the U.S. will exceed those Caucasian. So, I mean, the face of the church is going to be changing, too. There's probably an opportunity for us as the body of Christ to welcome the stranger, as you titled your book. Right?
Indeed. I think the motivation for the work that I do, really what I see as my calling in my life, is what can I do to bring people to know God? And I do think, even in my personal story and the many stories of people I've heard who have been persecuted or leaving really death circumstances, it's in that very migration experience that they actually encounter God. And oftentimes it's because there's a certain vulnerability in not knowing what's next and in trying to seek safety of another community that makes you really open to hearing the gospel. In fact, there's some missiologists that say that other than children under the age of 8, it's actually people who are immigrants that are the most open to hearing the gospel. And so I do think that as we consider the change demographics of our communities, it will impact the church. And this is a way that I think God is accomplishing his mission, which is when it says in Revelation that all nations, tribes, tongues will be worshiping before the throne. If people are living in places where they've never heard the gospel and are being persecuted, and they can find freedom and safety in a place where a church can reach out to them and share the gospel with them, I mean, what an incredible opportunity to reach nations for Christ without ever having to leave your own backyard. And so many of the people that we work with were former missionaries and are coming back to the States and still fulfilling their missionary call by reaching out to these new neighbors. And once you really get to know them, it's a tremendous opportunity to understand how God has been moving in their lives. And I do think God will use migration to revitalizes church in the United States. And we're already seeing that in a lot of denominations, whether it's the Evangelical Free Church, the Assemblies of God, or the Christian Reformed Church, or the Southern Baptist Convention. All of those denominations, their leaders have all said how immigrants are really revitalizing a large part of their communities. And so I do think we have a huge opportunity and a privilege, really, to participate in what God is doing through migration.
Talking to Jenny Yang. Jenny is co-author of a great book called Welcoming the Stranger, Justice, Compassion, and Truth in the Immigration Debate. And we've been focusing particularly on refugees today, just in light of World Refugee Day this past weekend. Jenny is the Vice President for Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Program at World Relief. You can find out more about the great ministry and work of World Relief at their website, worldrelief.org. And if you'd like to join in advocacy as well, there's opportunities for you to do that. You can also download a little prayer guide, and I encourage you to take that on as well and add this important area to your prayer life. And we'll talk more with Jenny in just a moment. One of the things that she talked about was for those refugees looking for health care and education, also looking for work. We'll get some perspective on that. And maybe just a tangible thing or two that we could do if we want to be a part of our church refugee resettlement. What are the basic needs that we could fulfill and make an eternal impact? All that and more coming up. If you'd like to join in the conversation, it's 877-93-FAITH. 877-933-2484. We've got a couple of copies of Welcoming the Stranger to give away. We'll do that at the end of the show.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Yeah.
Refugee population worldwide has grown to nearly 60 million. That's nearly double what it was just a decade ago, and obviously war and strife have created much of that. The U.S. Resettles some 70,000 or so per year, just kind of a drop in the bucket, but there are other ways that we can help. Jenny Yang is with World Relief. She's the Vice President for their Advocacy and Policy for the Refugee and Immigration Programs there. She's also co-authored the book Welcoming the Stranger. It's from University Press. And Jenny, I'm interested just maybe what World Relief does in these global areas. Do you join in with other humanitarian agencies in providing kind of food and health care and those kinds of things?
Yeah, actually one of the things that we have been really asking for support in is our work in Iraq and in Jordan right now to help some of the people who have been displaced. And specifically in Iraq, we're seeing a lot of the Christians that have been persecuted finding safety in local churches or in local communities. And we've been trying to just provide them with basic things like food and shelter through some of the agencies there. And so that's the real need that we have. The other thing we've been doing in Jordan, specifically also working through the local church there, is providing children-friendly spaces in which children are able to go to school and actually have after-school programs. And the reason why we think this is so important is because you're oftentimes having children who have been traumatized by war, who are finding safety in Jordan, who have left everything behind and have a lot of psychological trauma. And so a lot of these youth, if they don't have opportunities to express themselves and to actually process what happened, it really builds up in a lot of them. And I think there's a real need to empower a lot of the youth, especially, that really don't have hope for a future ever going back and don't know what's going to happen to them in Jordan, for example, try to think of a brighter future. And so a lot of that involves just psychosocial support and extracurricular activities, and we have been training a lot of church volunteers to be able to do that. And so that's one of the things we've been doing in Jordan. But I think in general, there is just an ongoing need. And one other area that we really are is urgent for us is in South Sudan as well. It's they're experiencing a man-made famine, which, you know, normally with famine you think it's because of lack of rain and things like that, but because of the conflict that's been going on there and the many that are displaced, many of them are Christian and they're suffering, and many of them can't even access food, and so we've been asking for support in that area as well, just to get more supplies, but also just immediate assistance to a lot of the displaced South Sudanese.
Are your workers safe? I mean, I guess we hear that in some situations that, you know, there's terrorists have moved into camps. Obviously, if you're overcrowding a sitting, maybe there's kind of unrest among neighbors and those kinds of things. I mean, it's not always easy work, I wouldn't think.
It's actually not. Unfortunately, we in South Sudan, we recently actually found out last week that two of our staff members were actually killed. They were fleeing the fighting, and in the process of fleeing their homes, actually were killed by some groups that had taken over that town. And half of the staff, of the locally hired staff, we can't locate at this time. And so it's been a really tragic situation. One of our managers of our program is trying to actually locate one of his children right now, which he cannot do. And so, you know, these are people that we've come to know that are really praying and asking God for his help. And so there's a lot, I think, especially in South Sudan, we can do right now to support what's been going on there. But in general, even in a place like Iraq, South Sudan is extremely dire given just the ongoing nature of the conflict there. But even in a place like Iraq, we have to be very careful of exactly where we work and whom we partner with, just to make sure that our staff is safe there and we don't jeopardize churches that are operating there as well. And so it's ongoing, I think, but I think especially this past week, a lot of our staff, we've been praying and just mourning for those two staff members, because we actually were trying to locate them for weeks and couldn't. So we had some fears that could have happened, and it was actually confirmed that they indeed passed away during the recent conflict there.
You mentioned, Jenny, about, children often traumatized, but it's, I'm sure, difficult for adults as well. You mentioned that many have good education. They've had important jobs. They come, and they're not allowed to work. Say a word about that. Are there some ways that the work can be provided?
Sure. I think in a place where you have a large number of refugees, for example, in the Middle East with Jordan and Lebanon, where the refugees are just coming in, it's most refugees, I would say, cannot use their skills that they were educated in, because there's just such a limited job market, and actually it's not legal for the refugees to work in a place like Jordan. And so this couple that I met, the woman who's an attorney and her husband who's a teacher, have a lot of skills, but they just are finding some side work to do for just to help support their families. But I think on the U.S. side, a lot of refugees are being resettled to the United States, and even as churches are partnering to volunteer and help them, many of them do have skills. For example, a lot of the Iraqis are engineers. They're middle-class, well-educated individuals that come here and oftentimes feel very frustrated because the jobs that they get immediately are less than, I guess, what they were anticipating. And so, not less, but it doesn't utilize their skills in terms of what they were trained in. And so we have been advocating and trying to support programs that actually will retrain and recertify individuals that do have a special, unique skill set. But I think that, it is oftentimes very challenging for refugees to be in a situation where you've lost everything and it's outside of your control, and then to go to a community where it's difficult to find that same line of work.
I want to talk about maybe some specific things we can do and how we can pray as well. But are there any of these refugees that can ever go back? I mean, is that, of the 60 million, will some eventually get back to their home places?
I think some will. For example, in Central Africa, there was a large number of Burundian refugees lived in Tanzania for 15 to 20 years, and many of them are actually transitioning back to Burundi or being integrated locally in Tanzania. So that's one example of where we've seen it happen. I think with the Syrian conflict, which is probably the most urgent right now, and or in terms of numbers, it's about one of the largest migration crises that we have. It's going to be challenging because it really depends on what politically happens in Syria. Then when you have a country that's completely devastated, where the infrastructure has been blown to bits, where none of the buildings and schools or hospitals are existing anymore, you have to wonder, well, what can the refugees actually go back to, because cities have been completely demolished. And so even if there's a transition, it probably won't take, you know, another decade maybe even for some of the people to even be able to go back. And so I do think when there is safety and rebuilding, many refugees, their first preference is always to go back home. They don't want to go anywhere else. But I think for a situation like Syria, for example, that it's probably going to take longer than they would need or want in order to return home.
One of the prayer items on the prayer download about praying for refugees, pray that they're resettled into compassionate communities connected to a local church and that they have access to necessary resources and relationships. Just say a word about what are some of those necessities and how can a local church really make a difference.
Sure. Well, I really think that, as Bill Hybel says this a lot, but the local church is the hope of the world. And when we live in communities of safety in a lot compared to the refugees, that there is a real need for refugees when they come here to basically have friendship, I think, and have relationships. And oftentimes what they immediately need is we look for people to help pick up refugees at the airport or to help set up apartments with furniture, to donate goods to some of our local offices in terms of clothing and kitchen goods and furniture. But a lot of times we just say we want partners with us to help build friendships with a lot of these refugees, because many of them, for example, our Atlanta office had a young father who was Iraqi. He has two little kids. One of them is handicapped, and his wife had just passed away before he came here. So he was a single dad with a handicapped child who had traumatized through the war. And, you know, our Atlanta office director was saying, we really would love a church to partner with us to help this person, even babysit the kids while he has to find a job and go work, but he couldn't find a church to help him with that individual family. And we have stories like this all the time of just really of really difficult experiences refugees have gone through. And so I would encourage folks to reach out to one of our U.S. offices to see if you can become a volunteer, and if not just you but your entire church can get involved, that would be amazing. And more than the initial logistical setups and pickups and things like that, for example, I mentored an Iranian family here in Baltimore where I live, and they literally cook me dinner every single week, and I took the kids to soccer games and, you know, take them to baseball games, and even if it's building a friendship, I think. And oftentimes we think, you know, we're sacrificing our time or resources to befriend these refugees. And what I found, what many people find, is that I actually have received more in that relationship than I think I could have given to them. And so there is really something I think that God can do in encountering someone who has gone through difficulties but has a lot of hope, and experiencing a different culture and tradition than our own, and really seeing how God can speak to people of all races and ethnicities and bring them to come to know him. So I think it's an incredible opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, such a good word. So glad to connect with you today, and really appreciate all that you and your team are doing, and pray that many more will join in. Jenny Yang, Vice President of Advocacy and Policy for Refugee and Immigration at World Relief. There are great programs there that are doing great work. Find out more at worldrelief.org, worldrelief.org, and you can read Jenny's book, Welcoming the Strangers. Well, Jenny, blessings to you. Thanks so much for checking in with us today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.